Okay, so today we're looking at case number 96 from the Shoyoroko, or Book of Equanimity. And as James reminded me, we're unpacking. We're going to unpack this koan for everyone, the way I see it. So one of the gifts, and there's a real gift in this particular koan. One of the gifts that koans present to us, or give us, is not doctrine. You know, it's not like this is the way you should practice, or this is the way, you know, it should be. It's not doctrine. These are ordinary encounters between masters and students, or masters. And some people have written an introduction about it. This is what I see. Then some people have put a verse to it. This is what I see. Sometimes we don't even look at the introduction. Like in this case with the Shoyoroku, all we are concerned about is the case. We're not really interested in the, well, we might be interested, but that is not what we deal with in the Dokusan room. In the Dokusan room, we just deal with the case. But because there is an introduction there and a verse, in many ways, it ties the whole thing together. So students in their own time may want to read the introduction and the verse if we don't do it in the Dokusan room. And there's a lot to be had from that because they're very, very ordinary. They're very ordinary. They might not seem ordinary because it comes from a source of deep, deep, deep realization. You know. And this is what is being shared with us. And this is what we are invited to enter into, the same realization that whoever wrote this verse or whoever wrote the introduction, you know, we're invited to share that realization of whoever wrote this. Same with the dialogue. We're invited to somehow share the meaning of what the particular Zen teacher here conveyed to a student, or a dialogue between two teachers. So this is a wonderful gift, and this one is really full of those gifts, you know, without getting into doctrine. It's just day-to-day stuff. Okay. So I'd like to read this out. So the title is Kyoho Does Not Acknowledge. Introduction. Ungo does not rely upon the holy ashes of a person who has faithfully followed the precepts. Kyoho does not appreciate expiring while sitting or standing. Gozo does not need hundreds of birds to bring him flowers. Obaku does not envy putting a cup upon a river and gliding across it. Tell me, what are their special merits? The case. Kyoho served Sekiso as his attendant. After Sekiso's passing, the assembly wanted to make the head monk the abbot of the temple. Kyoho would not acknowledge him. He said, "Wait till I examine him. If he understands our late master's spirit and intention, I will serve him as I served our late master." So he asked the head monk, "Our late master said, totally ceased, totally extinguished, becoming a cool land of desolation, fostering one thought for 10,000 years, becoming cold ash and withered tree, becoming a fragrant censer in the ancient shrine, becoming a vertical stripe of white silk. Tell me, what sort of matter did he clarify with this?" The head monk said, "He clarified the matter of the one color." Ho said, "If so, you have not yet understood our late master's spirit." The head monk said, "Don't you acknowledge me? Pass me the incense." He lit the incense and said, "If I had not understood our late master's spirit, I would not be able to pass away while the smoke of this incense rises." No sooner had he said this than he expired while sitting in Zazen. Kyoho seized his back and said, "Dying while sitting or standing is not impossible, but you could not even dream of our late master's spirit." and a verse. The school of Sekiso was intimately transmitted to Kyoho. Expiring in the fragrant smoke does not lead to the authentic stream. The crane in the moonlit nest creates a dream of 1,000 years, while the man in the snowing hut is deluded by the merit of one color. Cutting off all 10 directions through sitting is still a miserable failure. Truly, moving one step forward would witness soaring dragons. It's a very powerful koan, very powerful verse. So let's just unpack this now. So let's look at the introduction. The introduction, you know, like James and Scott mentioned, you know, you need to look at the footnotes in order to get this, because this refers to ancient China, and I would presume that people, when they wrote this, this was common knowledge. It's like when we write about Ned Kelly, we know immediately whatever it is about Ned Kelly, what's happening. Everyone knows the story of Ned Kelly. Hugo, you might not know because you're from Argentina, but it's like Australians would know. References to Ned Kelly, we just would know. And it's a similar here. These are references that were based in ancient China. So we look at it and it does not make any sense to us. So of course we need to do a little bit of research and find out what is meant here. So these are anecdotes, if you like, that did make sense at that time when it was written. So and sometimes it's interesting to look at those anecdotes and whether they happened or not, whether they are just, you know, stories like fairy tales, it doesn't really matter, but they can all tell us something. So Ungo does not reply upon holy ashes of a person who has faithfully followed the precepts. So the story Ungo of course is a famous teacher. So the story goes that he does not rely, you know, he says, on holy ashes of a person who has faithfully followed the precepts. So the story goes that, first of all, when someone dies, or when someone died, the story is that depending on their keeping the precepts, in other words, depending on their ethics, depending on their virtue, it is said that when someone dies and they get cremated, pearls arise in the ashes. So that's the legend, you know. So this is what they believe, okay? And one day, Ungo was sitting in a hut, and there were different hermits around wherever he was living. And actually, it reminded me a little bit of this. When I was walking the other day, you see all these little places where people live. Some people live in a van or a caravan or a little, you know, they live in just a little dwelling somewhere, or even their car, you know. And we have these little huts where we are, and there's all sorts of people living in all sorts of places. And you can just imagine in ancient China that was just the same. People made do with what they had, and they built these little places, and that's where they lived. And it was a place where hermits lived. It was a place of meditation. And when you watch some of these old movies where they actually feature, they're still today, when you see these old movies, you still see these hermits living in the mountains in ancient China. So anyway, this particular hermit was living there, and he had a really ragged clothing. And Ungo got someone to bring him his robe, a robe that he had, a spare robe, so that he could have it. And whoever brought it to this hermit brought it back, gave it back to Ungo with the message that, no thank you, but no thank you. I already have the robe from my mother. Already have one, thank you. So Ungo sent back a message, say, ask the hermit what robe he was wearing before his mother was alive. It's a little bit like, who were you before your mother was born? Like a koan, like a test, a question. You know, what robe were you wearing before your mother was alive? And he never heard back. So the story goes. So eventually this particular hermit died. And the town people cremated him, and ashes appeared of course, after the cremation, and in those ashes were pearls. So then they brought the pearls back to Ungo. And he's supposed to have said, and this comes back to this story, he's supposed to have said, it's far more important to realize who was wearing that robe before his mother was born than those pearls in the ashes. And of course, what that simply points to is that we get hooked on all sorts of different things, you know, supernatural things. And this koan is full of this. We get hooked on this exterior, on the outside, on concepts, on stories, rather than really focusing on the essential. So this is what this refers to. So Ungo does not rely upon holy ashes of a person who has faithfully followed the precepts. He does not rely on that. That is not the point. Kyoho, it goes on, does not appreciate expiring while sitting or standing. This is mentioned in the koan, so I'll refer back to that when I get to it. Then the next line goes, Gozo does not need hundreds of birds to bring him flowers. And the story here is that, again, this person was sitting in meditation, and apparently every time he sat in meditation, all the birds gathered, picked flowers, and just dropped them of where he was sitting. And the townspeople realized that there was a huge energy around this person. And apparently the story goes, when he had his breakthrough, when he really became enlightened, the birds disappeared. And here the message is that don't let outward appearances fool you. We might see someone sitting in deep meditation, or we might see someone that looks holy or is presented as a holy person, you know, doesn't mean anything. You know, after the actual complete awakening, certainly in the Zen lineage, it becomes totally ordinary. You can no longer distinguish the ordinary from the holy. You know, that is the way it is presented. And in his Teisho on this, Yamada Koan recalls this story where this Roshi was going with a monk in a very crowded train. And, you know, we've all seen the pictures in Japan where those trains are absolutely packed, you know, especially during rush hour, you know, like in many cities of the world. And this monk just sat there in meditation. And when this monk got back with the Roshi to the monastery, he got severely scolded. How dare you sit in meditation? How dare you sit in meditation while everyone else is crammed into this space in the train, you know? And he said, what a monk should do is they should make themselves as small as possible to allow more people to come into the train and not sit there in some fancy way in meditation. How dare you show off like that? And as it happened, someone actually wrote in some Buddhist magazine about this incident. Someone saw this incident and actually criticized the monk for doing that. So this is another example of, you know, don't look at the outward appearance. You know, someone doing that has not got their act together. You know, they're sitting there in meditation for the whole world to see. You know, that is not what it's about. So this is what this is referring to. The next one, so again, Gozu does not need 100 birds to bring him flowers. So this is repeating, doesn't need that. The next one, Obaku does not envy putting a cup upon the river and gliding across it. So the story here goes, Obaku, of course, is a very, very famous because he, well, not just because, you know, he in his own right was a magnificent master, but he was also the teacher of Rinzai. You know, we're part of the Rinzai tradition. And according to Dogen, he was even more, you know, advanced than Rinzai in his clarity, so the story goes. But here, Obako was traveling again with a monk, and they needed to cross the river, and this particular monk took a leaf, or some people say a hat, And he just stood on the hat and glided across the river, a bit like Jesus walking on water, you know. And Obaku got very upset, you know. Don't show off. That is absolutely no use having those powers, you know. And he scolded him for it. And so this is what this is referring to. Obaku does not envy putting a cup upon the river and gliding across it. So this brings us to, you know, concentration. We practice concentration. And concentration, especially when we achieve a high level of Choriki, does, especially for some people, does manifest in extraordinary powers that we can attain. We have all heard stories about this. Like paranormal stuff. You know, if you concentrate enough, you can levitate things. You know, we heard these stories. Whether we believe them or not is another thing. Unless we've probably witnessed it, we find it maybe difficult to believe. But there are stories all around the world from ancient history, and the master of them all was, of course, Jesus. You know, he had all these supernatural powers, you know, that he could do, and that is documented. Again, whether it's true or not, it doesn't really matter. But we hear those stories over and over and over again, that we have these extraordinary powers of concentration that result out of concentration. Someone, even a simple thing like someone being able to play a piano recital, the concentration that is required, it is like without even looking at the notes, it's just the body is doing it. They don't even think about it. In fact, if they do think about it, they can't do it. It's like, that is how powerful concentration is. Extreme sport isn't, when I say extreme sport, I mean at the highest level of sport, people that play golf or play tennis, the movement, in the beginning it aches and you wonder what's the best way to hit a ball or what. But there's practice, 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 practice. In the end, it just becomes one action. Or archery, or darts, or billiard. The practice, 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 the concentration gets us to such a state, gets us to such a state that the self is gone and it's just the action and it just happens. So, again, the message is Obaku does not envy putting a cup upon the river and gliding across it. That is not the point. That is not the point of our sitting. Okay. So, in a way, he's criticizing the merit of why do we actually sit here? Why are we meditating? What's the point of it? You know. So this is what this refers to. Because tell me, then the next line is, what are their special merits? You know. If we sit for the sake of sitting, what's the special merit? In classical Buddhism, the Buddha is said to have been able to migrate from realm to realm. Like, he can go from the hell realm, animal realm, to the heaven realm, the god realm, different realms. And of course, we do the same thing. You can go from coming here, feeling a bit agitated, a bit anxious, and you sit for a while, and you sit, and some people here are doing that, and you sit and sit and sit, and all of a sudden, bang, you're in the heaven realm. There's nothing at all. Literally in heaven. If thoughts disappear, no reverence, no reference point, nothing can disturb it. That is the highest bliss we can get. There's nothing at all. Not a speck of dust. Not a speck of dust. Absolute clarity. That is heaven. And in certain Buddhist traditions, this is criticized. Don't stay there. The Buddha did not just sit and kept on sitting and had his realization. In fact, he wanted to, if you know the story of the Buddha. You know, he went to heaven. He was in heaven. He was in jhana. He was staying there. And he said, no one will get this. I can't teach this. And so all the whoever was in heaven there with him said, get back down there and start teaching it. What are they teaching? They're teaching the method of other people to get to heaven. You know, it's the same with Jesus. He didn't rest on his laurels and didn't rest on his supernatural powers that he had or his connection with his Father. Same thing. He went out there. He went back into hell. Hell and heaven is nothing other than samsara and nirvana. He went right back there and integrated it. You know, it's the same thing. He went back there and integrated it. And in many ways, you will get a sense in this koan about what this is about. So what is this practice all about? Of course, we need to have that reference point of heaven. Without that, well, we need to go through that. It's like we need to be able to experience what hot is in order to tell our children, don't touch that, that's hot. A child would say, they got no idea what hot is. In a way, they need to touch it themselves. Otherwise, they don't know what hot is. You can say it as often you see, like, what is hot? And a child will not know unless they experience it. It's the same with heaven. We can talk about heaven until the cows come home. Unless you've been to heaven, you got no idea what heaven is. You know, and unless you've been to hell, you got no idea what hell is. And of course, there are realms of hell and heaven. You know, when we go to prison, it's going to hell for some people anyway. There's also heaven in prison. Some people that are not there, that have gone beyond that realm. Same sort of thing. So, the highest ideal in Zen, what is the highest ideal in Zen, is not how long we can sit or how long we can remain in jhana or in dhyana, as it is called in Sanskrit, jhana in Pali, meaning meditative absorption. The highest ideal in Zen is, of course, to go there. That gives us a foundation of peace that is unshakable. Because we have a reference point of it. There is an unshakable foundation of peace. But even then, that is not enough. The highest ideal is to get out there and manifest it through our conduct, through our day-in-day activity. That is the highest ideal. Now, if you say that to someone, oh, well, the highest ideal in Zen is your conduct, and you've got to be a good boy, and then everything will be hunky-dory, well, it's not quite like that. You really have got to somehow embody that. So it's like that golf swing. I can easily do a golf swing, but there's a golf swing and a golf swing. It needs to be without even thinking, without even trying, completely effortless, whack, bullseye, or one hole, whatever it's called in golf. Just like that. But that takes practice, 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 and continuously working on that. Now, it's not like James alluded to yesterday too. Don't wait. We can do that right now. This is our space to resource ourselves, and we all have different ability, different degrees of insight. And the degree to which we have these insights is the degree to which we are out there embodying our insights. That doesn't mean that we go out there and drag everyone to Zen. That's not how it works. It's got nothing to do with that. It is just being that which you are, you know, naturally. Yeah. But don't make it separate. Don't see if you can try to somehow get into the spirit of this integration of it. It's got to be integrated in day-to-day life, you know. Otherwise, there's sitting, and then there's life. It's not like that. There's just life. You know. Let's keep going. Then it gets so. He then asked me, "Tell me, what are their special merits?" So they're all rejecting all this supernatural stuff, and he's asking, "What are their special merits?" So that is in the introduction. The case. Kyoho served Sekiso as his attendant. So that's Jisha. We used to have, certainly in the lineage that I Das Ambo Zen Lin is usually a teacher has an attendant. I've dispensed with that. I didn't find it's necessary to have an attendant. So normally Jisha is someone that organizes the Dokusan room, that brings the teacher a cup of tea and looks after the teacher. That's an attendant, okay? We used to make fun of one of the attendants of Rosalind. When Rosalind, she's a very strict master, when she came and started teaching Zen in Brisbane, she had an attendant, Gary, and we used to call him Santa's little helper, you know, little teacher's pet. I don't know whether you appreciated that or not, but it's like, it's always like, in Australia, we don't really have attendance, you know, it's not part of our culture, and it's not necessary, you know. But if you run a really big Zendo, and especially when the teacher gets old, and, you know, it's not no longer as maybe fit as they were, then it's kind of nice to have an attendant to do some of the running around for the teacher. So anyway, Kyoho served Sekiso as his attendant. Okay, it's, by the way, it's a high role. If you're someone's attendant, especially when you're an abbot, you know, that is like, together with the cook, they are the most senior roles. And usually to get to that position, you've got to be very clear. You've got to be really clear to be in that position. So after Sekiso's passing, so he died, the assembly wanted to make the head monk the abbot of the temple. Okay. So the head monk, of course, is like Tanto, who wanted to make Tanto, you know, the abbot of the temple. And this is interesting that in this case, it's not transmission. It is just another function of being, you know, being the abbot. Like in our case, we have an abbot and... you know, the abbot gives transmission to his or her students. As in, yes, you've seen the Dharma, I give you transmission, you can now teach. But the abbot is another role yet again. The abbot looks after the whole, you know, after the whole organization. So it is both administrative, spiritual as well, but it's not the same as transmission. So here we have Sekiso's passed away and the head monk, Sekiso was, after the passing, said, I wanted to test the head monk to see whether I really want to continue being the attendant here. Okay, so reading that out again. Kyoho served Sekiso as his attendant. After Sekiso's passing, the assembly wanted to make the head monk the abbot of the temple. So they voted. Okay, that's the person, let's make him or her the abbot. Kyoho would not acknowledge him. Oh, he said, I disagree. I don't acknowledge him. Okay. So wait till I examine him. He said, okay, let's give it a minute here. Wait till I examine him. And if he understand our late master's spirit and intention, I will serve him as I served our late master. So that's what he did. He wanted to take his time and he wanted to see whether this, you know, this head monk had the spirit of the original abbot. So he asked the head monk. Okay. Now this is where we get to the part that needs to be looked at in Dokusan. This is the part that is quite interesting. In fact, that's what the whole koan is about, the next part. Okay. The rest, these are all fill-in stories. So our late master said, totally ceased, totally extinguished, becoming a cool land of desolation, fostering one thought for 10,000 years, becoming cold ash and a withered tree, becoming a fragrant censer in the ancient shrine, becoming a vertical stripe of white silk. Tell me, what sort of matter did he clarify with this? And this is asked in the Dokusan room. You need to answer that. What sort of matter is clarified with this? And of course, we know that the head monk said he clarified the matter of one color. He clarified the matter of one color. Okay. So let's just look at it. Let's look at these statements. Totally ceased, you know. Like here, and this is what everyone needs to really when you work on a koan, you really need to, you now need to get the spirit of this. You know, what is, when it says totally ceased, okay? The first thing is, that's a very conceptual, in fact, all of them are very, very conceptual phrases. Let's put it this way, they're conceptual phrases. What's totally ceased? You know, totally ceased. So you can now put concepts on that, like, oh, totally ceased, totally gone, died. Okay. But that is still conceptual. That's conceptual, you know, very conceptual. Totally ceased. In other words, it is hiding something. What is it hiding? It is hiding that which has ceased. It is hiding the fact of the matter. What's the fact of the matter? Totally ceased. It's just, that's just a metaphor for something. Or is it? So if we look at that, we can easily get stuck in the story of what it means to be totally ceased. And we can write a thesis on this, and people do. You know? Totally poor, totally ceased, gone, everything's fallen out of the bucket. These are all concepts. You need to present totally ceased. But not only present it in a sensic sort of a way, but in day-to-day life. That totally ceased needs to be presented in day-to-day life, in your everyday activity. And how do you do that spontaneously in front of the teacher in the Dokusan room? That's the challenge. It's got nothing to do with an ancient story somewhere in China. Totally ceased. How do you present that? That is absolutely real and authentic. That's what the challenge is. Totally extinguished. Same thing, very similar. Totally extinguished. Show me, totally extinguished. Becoming a cool land of desolation. This is where poetry comes in. And poetry is this language of becoming a cool land of desolation. Of course, we can take it apart. And I would hope that the student would recognize there's no such thing as becoming. Becoming is like I'm something and I'm becoming something else. It's like, you know, whether that is even the right translation, we don't know. It's something about becoming. You know, I would hope that the student recognizes there is no becoming whatsoever. Becoming a cool land of desolation. So here, the image is beautiful, a cool land of desolation. Remember, this is China, northern hemisphere. A cool land, winter, a cool land of desolation. All the trees, all the leaves have fallen down. Everything looks dead, looks desolated. It's like the bucket. Everything has gone out of the bucket. A cool land of desolation. That's what this is the beautiful, it is evocative. It evokes this, a cool land of desolation, winter. Nothing is remaining. No dust. Show me no dust. That's the next question. Show me no dust in your day-to-day deliberations. In your day-to-day activity. I don't want to know what happened yesterday or the day before. Right now. You know, this is the challenge. Fostering one thought for 10,000 years. I wonder what my wife's doing today. Becoming cold ash, again, that word becoming. Becoming cold ash and a withered tree. All gone. Cold ash and a withered tree. Already dead. Already dead. Becoming a fragrant censer in the ancient shrine. Becoming a vertical stripe of white silk. Becoming a vertical shrine. there a vertical stripe of white silk right here. Coming over, white silk. Can you see white silk? So again, different layers of looking at this, the conceptual way. Now, of course, I mean, the conceptual way is also important, and in many ways that gets us to it, you know. The first of all, the concepts, and you think, oh, I wonder what this Zen is about, I wonder what they're doing, and let me, okay, that sounds really interesting, and oh, that's a good thing, I never heard this before, da-da-da-da-da. The concepts are also important, you know. But then you just chip away at it, chip away, chip away, letting go, letting go, letting go, letting go. That desolate, coming to the state where all the leaves fall off the tree. Everything exits the bucket. Desolation. It's not negative. Desolation. Just I alone. Aloneness. All of this. Desolation. You know. So the conceptual way of looking at it, then another layer. And then from that other layer, which is what you may see when you are sitting in meditation, how do you now apply that? How do you now integrate that in your day-to-day life? That is the next level. Don't just meditate on this. You've got to go and actually integrate it. Otherwise, you're staying in heaven and there's no. It's very pleasant, of course, but it's of no use. How do you integrate this? So anyway, the question that he asked is, tell me, what sort of a matter did he clarify with this? So that's what the head monk asked this. Sorry, this is what the attendant asked the head monk. And the head monk said, he clarified the matter of the one color. You know, it's like the one color. One color is another word for one world. He clarified the matter of oneness. He clarified the matter of awakening. He clarified the matter of what you get maybe when you have a Kensho experience. He clarified the matter of one color. What's interesting about this is that he now rejected that. He said, the head monk said, if so, you have not yet understood our late master spirit. You have not understood what this whole practice is all about. You've reached a certain level, but you're not yet there. So looking at the Teisho from Yamada Roshi on this, there's actually a word for this in Japanese. I forget now what the word is, but it's like a board-carrying fellow. Carrying a board, like a wooden board, he only sees one side. He doesn't see the other side. He's still stuck. It's like, first there is delusion, we're stuck in dualism, then all of a sudden we have a breakthrough, oh my gosh, there's actually, wow, look at all of this, we see this other world, you know, and now he is stuck in this world, but he doesn't see the other side now, he's just stuck there, he's seen that world of emptiness, and he's stuck there and he looks at it just one color. Wow, it's just one world. That is what he clarified, this one world. You know. And there's a koan, you know, show me the sound of one hand. One hand. This one or this one? Which one is it? Is it this side or is it this side? It's one hand, two perspectives. So this is what he's referring. That's why he didn't acknowledge him. You know, he's only clarified. He's only gone so far on the journey. And quite often, what happens here, of course, in our Zendo and in our lineage as well, this is why the Sesshin is so important and the practice is so important. There are not very, very many traditions left that actually teach to really clarify this side of the hand, this emptiness side. There are not many traditions actually where you can go that really focus on that. You know, without sort of with real determination. Luckily, our lineage is one of those, and I was very fortunate to have found it. And here we are, and you guys are fortunate that you found it as well. Okay. So what happens sometimes is that through this koan work that we are doing, because every koan is clarifying this side of emptiness. Every koan is about that we can get stuck there, you know, because the other side, which is the dualistic side, is what happens when we go out into the world. When we tell our wife, oh, I had an enlightenment experience, and she says, yeah, pull the other one. You know, that's the other side of it. That just doesn't work that way. You know, so how do you integrate that? You have this experience and you go out and you want to share it, and it's like, no. You're still a naughty boy, you know, yes. Go and you haven't done the dishes or you haven't done whatever. It's like that, you know. So we need to really, we need to go back and somehow integrate what we have here day to day. That is the hard work. That is the difficult part. You know, getting into heaven is not that difficult. We just concentrate, move. Those that are determined will get there, no doubt about it. You know, but the hard part is actually stepping, and it gets to that stepping of the 100-foot pole, getting past that. You know, that is the difficult part. So the spirit of, you know, the spirit and the, you know, the spirit of this lineage, you know, the spirit of this lineage, and I hope everyone gets that. It started off, of course, with Shakyamuni Buddha. He had this enlightenment experience. He did not rest there. He went and he taught it. He taught it as many people as he could, and it was so powerful. It's the same with Jesus. His spirit is the same thing. It was so powerful that here we are today because of that experience and his teaching. That is why we're still here today, 2,500 years later. It has reverberated all the way to right here. We're still dealing with same with these Zen teachers in ancient China. This story is still alive, right here, right now. Why? Because here it is. We're talking about it. You know. So this, please get into the spirit. See the spirit of it. So the head monk then said, "Don't you acknowledge me?" Like, he's very upset because the attendant didn't acknowledge me. Now, when I was working on this, I thought, yeah, it's interesting. We want acknowledgement, don't we? And this is, I mean, that's a primal thing. You know, it's really a primal thing, wanting acknowledgement or approval. We crave it, you know. And what came to me was that we crave it because what is it that we're actually craving? We're craving this unity. We don't want any disharmony because we don't want to feel separate. We do not want to feel separate. We all want to be a good boy or a good girl. Comes back to children already. We all want that. And if we don't get it, it causes all sorts of issues. But the degree to which we can actually see this one hand or this world of one color is when you see this one, you see there is no separation in anything, and quite frankly, acknowledgement falls away. The need to be approved falls away because you're there. There is nothing that needs approval. That falls away. You know, nothing needs approval. It's a wonderful thing. And of course, when you've experienced this in sitting, and when you get into that realm of no thought, there's no way that you need approval in that realm. There's just, it's heaven. Why would you need approval once you're in heaven? It's when we get back to hell that surfaces. When we get back into our discursive thinking, our dualism. The dualism in many ways calls us to non-dualism. That's what happens. It calls us into it. So anyway, he didn't acknowledge me. So then he said, oh, I'll show you. You don't acknowledge me. Pass me the incense. He says, I'll show you my powers. I'll show you how far I've come in my practice. Pass me the incense. And he lit the incense and said, if I had not understood our late master's spirit, I would not be able to pass away while the smoke of this incense rises. And then he died. And again, you know, there are, you know, there are incidences where we may have heard stories of, but I certainly have, where people can just materialize their own death through the power of concentration. They just materialize their own death. So, and that's what he did. No sooner had he said that than he expired while sitting in Zazen. Kyosho caressed his back and said, "Dying while sitting or standing is not impossible, but you could not even dream of our late master's spirit." He felt sorry for him, because he only went a certain way. He only said a certain way with his practice. Now we come to the verse. The school of Sakisa was intimately transmitted to Kyoho. So, and this comes back to transmission. You know, you cannot book learn, you can of course book learn it. I call it academic Buddhism. But what are you transmitting? Academic Buddhism? Yeah. You can know everything about Buddhism, all the different traditions, you can or just one tradition, you can just become an absolute, you know, authority on the sutras or one tradition or all of the tradition or interreligious. You can just know the whole thing. But have you really got it? Have you really seen the spirit of it? So that is why in Zen it starts off with the origin point. I always make that point in the introductory lectures. The origin point of Zen is Shakyamuni's awakening experience. And that is what is being transmitted. Not the awakening, we can't transmit the awakening experience, but what is seen, what is manifested, the actualization of that experience. So first of all, getting to that experience, providing a framework for people to have that experience, you know, and this is a wonderful framework that Zen over, you know, many, many centuries has established, and then even then beforehand through Buddhism. This is this wonderful framework that we have. So this is how it is transmitted. No teacher can transmit it. It's impossible. All a teacher can do is provide a framework. You know, that's what Buddha did. That's what Jesus did. That's what all the other masters did. All the other in all great religions. How that framework is now interpreted or which way the wheel actually rolls, we don't know. But trying to keep it as authentic as possible is how actually the Zen, for those that, I won't go into the history of it, but that is how Zen started, because Buddhism was taught in all sorts of different ways in China, and someone said, no, let's go back to the origin, which is the experience. Forget all the sutras and all the doctrine. That's been tampered with, and that's been altered so that you no longer, you know, it becomes a belief system, it becomes a doctrine, rather than actually validated through experience. Hot is not hot unless you really know what hot is. So this is where this transmission comes down to. The experience is key. That is why we say, you know, this tradition puts a lot of emphasis on Kensho. But of course, Kensho is not always the Big Bang thing. Being able to see it, you know, some people don't have a Big Bang experience, but they still see it, you know. I don't know how how that works, we don't know. People still see it, you know. So that's where the school of gradual awakening comes in and sudden awakening, you know. So there's different approaches to all of this. So the school of Sakisa was intimately transmitted to Kyoho. Expiring in the fragrant smoke does not lead to an authentic stream. Yeah, just being able to say, okay, I'm going to die now while sitting in Zazen and click, I'm dead, does not lead to the authentic stream, does not continue the lineage, does not continue this whole process. The crane in the moonlit nest creates a dream of 1,000 years. Again, beautiful image. The crane in the moonlit nest. So this is like the image of this one world. The crane, just imagine it, a crane, beautiful crane, in a moonlit nest, creates a dream of 1,000 years. So even sitting in meditation, falling into jhana, we have this dream. it's a dream. It's not real. It's a dream, as in a dream of 1,000 years. It's still a dream. It's don't stay there. It's a dream. It's a dream of one thousand, creates a dream of what this world of emptiness creates, a dream of 1,000 years. No time, no space. We're just resting, nothing at all, being, just being. A dream of 1,000 years. While the man in the snowy hut is deluded by the merit of the one color. So that refers back to the head monk, the man in the snowy hut. In other words, he's seen that world of emptiness, this world of oneness. He's the man in the snowy hut. While the man in the snowy hut is deluded by the merit of one color, he's deluded by what he thinks this is all about. Cutting off all 10 directions through sitting is still a miserable failure. Or instead of saying failure, you could say it's still only one-sided, because it is necessary. It is necessary. It's a process. You know, here it's very, very, very sharp, saying failure. Cutting off all 10 directions through sitting is still a miserable failure. So it's one-sided, okay? Cutting off all 10 directions, that's that bucket. That bucket needs to be empty when you have an argument with your partner, not while you're sitting here in meditation. That bucket needs to be empty when you're in the biggest traffic jam and you're late for work. That's when that bucket needs to be empty. Otherwise, it's not real. It needs to be manifested in day-to-day, in our day-to-day lives. Truly moving one step forward, like from that, truly moving one step forward from your experience, would witness soaring dragons. Oh, what a wonderful morning.